This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We'll discuss this choice of intro music.
Sandstorm, Drew, it's a great choice.
This is the most Remus choice of music ever.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
The Jets are playing a lot more techno music this year. You notice that, Remus?
I do notice that. That's why I chose this one.
I don't mind that. I don't think that one sort of German death metal song that they play that I'm not crazy about.
Rammstein?
Yeah, it's probably Rammstein or something. It's a little bit too much for me.
Rammstein coming up next segment.
Okay. Thanks, Remus. Appreciate you looking out for me at all times.
Du hast.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. As we mentioned...
Why was that song ever popular? It's terrible.
Sandstorm?
Yeah, like, why is that a good song? It sounds like a chainsaw, like, just... like, or something. It's just awful. It's not music.
Your buddy, Aaron DeGroot, as he is going to have a word with you about it, because he's very happy that we just played that.
Like, I don't mind, like, Daft Punk and, like, you know, Skrillex and some of these groups, but, like...
You like Skrillex, eh?
Yeah, it's not bad.
I think you more like Skittles.
They were pretty good at Burning Man.
Winnipeg Jets trade value. We're going to do this position by position. So we'll start with the forwards. And with apologies, as I mentioned, this, you know, we're lifting this idea from Bill Simmons and his yearly column that he does about NBA trade value.
I'm sure he cares.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't, in fact. I'm sure he is listening.
No, he listens to the show.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's listening.
Yeah.
You know, Winnipeg Jets have... We're only going to look at guys who are on the sort of the active roster, the 14 forwards that are currently with the Winnipeg Jets, including Evander Kane. We're actually going to add a 15th forward, and that's Alex Burmistrov, because he is of Winnipeg Jets property, and he technically has some trade value, but not looking at the rookie guys, the guys who haven't played yet in the NHL. So Nikolai Ehlers and Nick Petan are not going to be included in this conversation. So... You know, and everything is going to come into effect. You're going to look at the current salaries that these players earn, their contract status, their age, everything that you would take on if you were to trade for one of these players, and rank them in trade value, starting from 15 all the way through 1. At the bottom, with the least amount of trade value right now, from my perspective, and it,
well, I thought you were asking us.
I'm going to ask you guys too, but I'm going to start with my perspective, and then you guys can get the conversation rolling. Based on the 3-year contract he signed in the offseason.
You better not say Thorbs.
I'm going to say it's Chris Thorburn. Because I don't think he gets that contract from anybody else. If it was a 1-year deal, there's no such thing as a real bad 1-year contract, as we've said on this show many times. But at 3 years, or for another 2 years after this season, at $1.2 million, I just don't see the Winnipeg Jets being able to trade out of that contract.
I think the player with the lowest trade value on the Jets right now is Anthony Peluso. I think if it's between Anthony Peluso and Chris Thorburn, I think Chris Thorburn will play more than Anthony Peluso.
Well,
I think Chris Thorburn has more offensive ability than Anthony Peluso.
Can we just shorten the segment? Gagliardi, Peluso, Halaschuk, Thorburn, Slater really have no trade value.
I disagree. I think that...
Who's getting anything in a trade? Aside from a fifth rounder. You're not getting any more than the fifth rounder for any of those guys.
But I think when you look at Jim Slater, I think he's done... And TJ Gagliardi, we got to give him credit, guys. They've been a good penalty-killing unit. Been good.
I'm not saying there's not...
Will you give me that?
I'll give you something.
Well, they have been effective. I mean, the Jets were 100% on the penalty kill for the first, 4 or 5 games. And that's who they were putting out there. Well, I'm just saying. I mean, Jim Slater, good face-off guy.
Hey, Jim Slater may get you a fourth rounder... even a fourth rounder is as high as I think go. That's what I think. None of those guys are more than a fifth, fourth, sixth rounder. So
I definitely
let's
think
get into the let's get into the real issue.
I think within those guys, and that might be because I am the creator of the GST line, you know, along with Jay Richardson. So I happen to like Slater and Thorbs, and the fact that they add the leadership value and all that.
I think your trade value is lower than Thorbs. So.
No, but I look at I think within that group, and I think TJ Gagliardi. I know he's a guy that's bounced around from Colorado, San Jose, Calgary. I've been impressed with TJ Gagliardi, and I realize he might be more of a fourth line guy, and he's playing a third line role right now because Evander Kane's gone. But I think to me, if you rank those guys, I think Anthony Peluso, and again, Anthony Peluso could chuck the knuckles. Don't get me wrong, but I think that for me, Thorburn has more of a higher value, and then Slater even has a little bit of a higher value than Thorburn because Jim Slater's a good faceoff guy. He can penalty kill. know, and all that. And he can, you know, score a little bit as well. So for me, if I'm ranking those guys, I probably put Slater above Peluso and Thorburn, and then maybe Gagliardi's kind of similar to Slater.
Most of those guys clear waivers. With due respect, most of those guys clear waivers.
Okay, then let's skip over those guys. So that's the bottom five, let's say.
Okay.
And now we're into the meat and potatoes of the rest of the Winnipeg Jets core group of the team.
Yes.
So let's start from the bottom there. Right now, you know, given their contract situations and everything else, who is your least tradable of those players?
Well, I think they're all tradable. So I don't think it's at least. I think they're all tradable. It's just compensation that you will get back for the player, yep. I think right. is what we're talking about here.
That's right.
I think I probably have, out of the rest of the guys, Bermistrov, I think we'll talk about separately, Drew.
Sure.
But Frolik would be the least valuable on the market because he's got 1 year left on his deal. I think he's a valuable.
Yeah. Pending unrestricted free agent.
I agree with you on that one, Rich.
No term. So out of all these guys, he's got the least amount of term. And if you're trading for a third line winger, right winger, at the deadline, you're not giving up much. So I think Frolik would be the least valuable in terms of trade return right now.
Yeah, and Frolik's done a great job, and he's got the Stanley Cup in Chicago, as we all know, and the Jets wanted to sign him to a long-term contract. We don't know if that's an option at this point. We don't know, because they're not negotiating right now.
They're not allowed to. I mean, you can negotiate, but you cannot sign him to a contract until January 1st.
Right, that's correct, Drew.
I'm not sure if you can negotiate before January 1st. I don't believe you can.
You can't even talk?
I don't believe you can.
Really?
Yeah, I'll check the rules.
And there's no way they're policing that, though.
Of course not.
Yeah.
I think Michael Frolik is a guy, and you know, I like Michael Frolik's game. I think on a good team, like the Chicago Blackhawks, where he came from, or you know, other teams that are looking for someone who can penalty kill, they can put out there. He's got some offensive talent, guys. I mean, Michael Frolik can score 20 goals for you. He scored 15 goals last year. He had two 20-goal years with the Panthers in his first 2 years. But he's a guy, you know, he's a third-line guy, but, you know, very smart player. Smart, skilled player. So I think, you know, Frolik, you know, if you're going to acquire him, it's probably going to be for a draft pick.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to get a first-round draft pick, but you could maybe argue he might get a second, probably a third.
You could get a low second for a contending team looking to fill their top nine, you know, going down the stretch, maybe some injuries when he's only got 1.2 left on his deal or something like that.
I got to say, Drew, though, you know, we're talking about the Jets early on the season, right? Seven games into the season and kind of the issues that they've had. You take Michael Frolik out of this lineup, that's a big... I think he is valuable to this team, and that's why I would be happy, and I think if they did sign him to a term deal, you know, 3 or 4 year deal, something like that, I think that would be a good signing because, you know, Frolik's friends with Pavlik and all that, and I think he's been a nice addition to the Jets.
I think that assumes that people want Pavlik to stay around for that many more years.
That's another story.
Yeah. Okay, so you're in agreement that you have Michael Frolik at ninth after the bottom five that we already spoke about, that Michael Frolik is the ninth most trade value among Winnipeg Jets forwards.
Yeah, and he'd have higher trade value probably if he was under contract for a couple more years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Next, number eight.
Depending on what that contract is. Matthew Perreault, I'd have a number eight because, you know, when you talk about some of the young players and some of the other guys, he's probably the least talent. And I like Matthew Perreault. I like what he brings to the table, but he's, you know, considering he's not your second line center and he's not that checking line center, that I think diminishes his value to an extent, and it depends on the construction of your roster. But if a team needs a guy like has an injury up front, maybe to a center position, or wants more depth at center, although the Jets are playing him at wing now, and the fact that his contract's only $3 million for 3 years, I could see him getting some kind of a return, but nothing crazy. But the idea is it would be more than what Frolik likely would get, because you probably get a player in return, maybe a draft pick as well. I think the term on his contract makes him a little more valuable than Michael Frolik, but you're not getting a big return for him.
Yeah, Matthew Perreault, good player, really skilled player. You know, he's been elevated to the top line because Evander Kane's injured, obviously, and he would have been penciled in as the third line center for most of the year. But he's a guy that, you know, on Washington Anaheim, he's had varying degrees of success. He's had, you know, they've given him power play looks and all of that. But he's a guy that, you know, he's not a physical guy, very good faceoff guy. He's one of the top, I think he's top 25 right now in the NHL. And
very small faceoff
does very well in defensive zone and offensive zone faceoffs. But he's a guy that you're probably not going to pencil in as a second line center on most teams. And that's why the Anaheim Ducks went out and they got Ryan Kessler, and they have a guy like Raquel as their third line center now, and other players, it's not really a little bit of an issue there right now, but For me, Perreault, for me, if we're going up the lineup, I think Perreault, it's getting close to, you know, Adam Lowry's trade value is, for me, Perreault's trade value is less than Adam Lowry because of the potential of Adam Lowry. So
you both are in agreement in number 9 being Michael Frolik, number 8 being Matthew Perreault, number 7 for you, Richard.
I have Adam Lowry 7, yep. And I think he's going to be probably top out of the third line talent. But you take into account the fact that he's cheap contract.
Yeah.
That he's a big body.
And under team control for the next number of years with no leverage.
Exactly. So 6 more years of team control for of him. He can play wing or center. He's a big body. The contending teams like big bodies. And again, his contract is cheap. Like, skill-wise, he's not as skilled as Perreault or Frolik, I don't think. But when you take into account the whole package, I would have him as the 7th most valuable trade chip for this team.
Yeah, the Jets have a lot invested in Adam Lowry, 2011 draft pick. You know, he does everything, you know, and again, we pointed out some of his mistakes, and that's going to happen with a 20-year-old mm-hmm. forward in his first full-time NHL season. But the guy competes hard. He's got really good hockey sense, obviously has the bloodlines. He has the versatility. He can play center or wing. And he's a guy that, you know, you look at the future of this team with Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba and even some of the more recent draft picks like Nikolaj Ehlers and Patan. He's part of that young core of this team. So he has high trade value, you know, and it'll only go up because he's just learning the NHL game now. So I think I'll have him there as well. And, you know, I think the future is very bright for Lowry.
Michael Frolik, number 9. Matthew Perreault, number 8. Adam Lowry, number 7. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets forward group and their trade value, ranking them in order. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Number 6 for you, Ezra Ginsberg.
Ooh, okay, now it's getting a little tough. You know, are you going to value someone who's locked up to more of a contract, or are you going to value maybe the future potential of a Mark Scheifele? Richie might have Mark Scheifele number 1. With this forward group, I'm going to say Brian Little next. And I think Brian Little, you know, has done a great job, and he had a career year last year. But I think Brian Little is a guy that for most people will be looking at him, and they're probably looking at him more of a second or even third line center if you're a contending playoff team. So I think, you know, Brian Little, he's got 3 more years left on his contract at $4.7 million, which I think is a pretty fair contract. And I'm not the good, you know, contract guy. Richie knows contracts more than I do. You know, I think Brian Little, I have him a little bit lower than guys like Kane, Byfuglien, Wheeler, just because I think those guys have more offensive upside, really. I mean, again, Brian Little, I think, is a 55 to 60 point guy. And what I mean by that maybe is based on the 3 years left as opposed to the 1 year left for Byfuglien and Ladd. Mm-hmm. I think Little's numbers, you might see them start to decrease maybe in 2 or 3 years. So I'm going to put Brian Little next.
I have Andrew Ladd next. Might surprise some people. I think when you take into account, you know, Andrew Ladd, he performs in terms of, you know, he's going to be getting you, like if you look at his stats the past few years, you know, 54, 46, 50, of course, 46 and 48 games, 54 points last year. You know, you're going to get about 50 to 55 points, depending on the ice time he gets. But again, he's got 1 year left on his contract after this year. To me, he doesn't play as engaged physically as he did before. He kind of changed his game a bit, and maybe a change to a lesser role in a roster would change the style of play again. But I have him at 6 because his contract situation is a factor, and because Byfuglien, I feel like, I'll talk about him next. I feel like a team could fill in a different role for Byfuglien. They feel like his size would be more of a factor in the playoffs. They could play him on defense. They could play him in forward. There's a flexibility there. They both have the same amount of term. The contracts are pretty similar. I have them very close, but I have Ladd just a bit below because the term is not the same as some of the other players on the roster that I have higher. And, you know, he's 28 years old now, and he's played a lot of years in the league. And I think Ladd has a fair amount of trade value. I think a contending team, like, say, Anaheim, might want to plug him into the top line left wing spot, something like that. A bunch of other teams, I'm sure, would be interested. But I have him just below Byfuglien in terms of value.
Michael Frolik, you both had 9. Matthew Perreault, you both had 8. Adam Lowry, you both had 7. Ezra, you had Brian Little at number 6. Richard, you had Andrew Ladd at number 6. When we come back, we unveil our top 5 in order in terms of Winnipeg Jets forwards and their trade value. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. We are talking about the Winnipeg Jets forward group and their trade value, given their contracts, given their age, given the number of miles they have on their tires, everything in that regard. We've sort of disqualified Jim Slater, Chris Thorburn, Matt Halaschuk, TJ Gagliardi, and Anthony Peluso from the conversation. Richard and Ezra agreed that Michael Frolik is ninth, Matthew Perreault is eighth, Adam Lowry is seventh. They disagreed on the number six spot, where Richard has Andrew Ladd and Ezra has Brian Little. Your number five in terms of trade value, Ezra Ginsberg.
It would be Ladd, who I had, Richie had fifth, sorry. And Andrew Ladd, of course, has one more year left on his deal at $4.4 million. I think Andrew Ladd has trade value in the sense that if a team is looking for a veteran guy to shore up the bottom six, I think, you know, he's a guy that can really help your team. And I think there are quite a few teams out there. And, you know, when you start looking at teams around the NHL, I know Richie mentioned the Ducks. I look at a team like the Islanders, who I'm really high on, and the left side is probably their weakest side. They've got Nikolai Kulam in there on the second line. But for me, Andrew Ladd, he's had a tough go at it this year. He's had a tough year. And I know as the captain, Richie, he gets criticized a lot, and he has to take that criticism. I think he does a very good job at it. And, you know, it's another conversation, will he get traded or not? Because he's obviously the captain. He was the first guy, you know, to put his name on a contract when the Atlanta Thrashers came over. But I think for me, he's number five on my list for having the highest trade value.
For him, I mean, he doesn't look like the same player right now. It's only seven games, but he's not inspiring confidence. But I'm of the opinion that if he were to go to a different place, his game would change quite a bit. Scenery change might be of a benefit to him.
Richie?
Number five, I have Byfuglien. He's got a year left on his deal. You know, when you have a year left on your deal after this season, it makes you more appealing. Your $5.2 million per term per year cap hit is less of a hindrance to making a trade because there's less term. The ability, first of all, the skill level is exceptionally high. The size, the physicality when he is engaged in the game, the ability to play defense and forward, the ability to play on all diff, you know, first line if you need him to, third line, second line, whatever it may be. He's got that versatility. He has a playoff track record, which Ladd does as well. I just think it'd be more appealing to some of the some of the teams out there. And if you put him in the right situation, I think he'd be a very effective player. So I have him as the fifth most valuable Jet on the trade market. And I just to editorialize for a second here in terms of the trade market, Ladd and Byfuglien, I think, are two guys that they should be shuffling out this year. With this 1 year left on their deal, I think it's imperative to be able to get maximize the return. They probably waited even too long to do it, but now is better than next year.
Ezra Ginsberg has Brian Little at number six and Andrew Ladd at number five. Richard Pollock has Andrew Ladd at number six and Dustin Byfuglien at number five. Your fourth.
Yeah, well, I've got Buff at four. And it's for many of the same reasons Richie has him there. I think, you know, teams would love to have Buff. You look at Dustin Byfuglien and the goal that he scored against the Carolina Hurricanes in that 3-1 win. How many guys of his size have that speed and that skill set to do that? And he's done that a lot for the Jets. And again, you know, for the fans that are, you know, listening to the show, hopefully they're fans of the show if they're listening. But if you're talking about Byfuglien and Ladd, we're not, you know, saying trade these guys because they aren't good players and they haven't done a good job for the Winnipeg Jets over the last 4 years. They just happen to be two players whose contracts expire next year. And if the Jets are, you know, and again, you know, we're not saying by any means that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets are looking to make a trade. We're doing this for the purposes of discussion. And when you look at this team and the future of this team, if those guys aren't locked up to contracts and then they're lame duck next year, why are you keeping them on the team? Because we know, guys, what the future of this team is. And you know, you have Josh Morrissey is probably going to make the team next year. I would say there's a higher than 90% chance he's on the team next year. And you look at some of the other guys that they've drafted in previous drafts. you know, there's players coming through the pipeline here for the Jets. So, again, a long-winded response. I think Buff is four for me because he has that versatility, play the point on the power play. He's big. He can mix it up. We saw him fight yesterday. He almost squished Radko Gudas. So Buff's number four for me.
Richard?
Brian Little, I have number four, Drew. And he's really performed well. I've never been the biggest Brian Little fan, but I appreciate what he brings to the table. And he can skate, and he's added a nice... he can add a nice offensive element. The reason I have him as the four ahead of, say, Buff, Leonard, Ladd is because of the term off in his deal. I didn't love the deal when it was signed, but it ended up being a really nice value by Kevin Cheveldayoff here. 4.7 cap hit for the next 3 years after this year. He's 26 years old. 23, 24 goals over the past, two full seasons. It's seven in the Lotko season, but 24, 23 goals. He can play that second line role on a really top-heavy team, meaning a team that has a big-time first-line center. Like a team like Chicago, for example, if you know they need a center, I'm not saying that's anywhere he's going to go. But the idea is that Taves and then the Little, I think, helps you out. I think that Little, his ability to be able to play at a fast pace and score, and I think makes him appealing. And I think on the trade market, teams would like to be able to add a guy like Brian Little because he can play in your top six and because the game is moving to that speed game. Even if he's not the biggest guy, he could play. I don't think he could play in a top line role. I firmly believe that, but I think in a second line role with a big time top player ahead of him, he would be fine.
Yeah, so if you're talking Chicago, he's playing with Patrick Kane and Brandon Saad.
Like, for that, yeah, an example like that.
To recap, you both had Michael Frolik at number 9, Matthew Perreault at number 8, Adam Lowry at number 7. Richard, you had Andrew Ladd at number 6. Ezra, you had Brian Little at number 6.
Yep.
At number 5, Richard, you had Dustin Byfuglien. Ezra, you had Andrew Ladd. At number 4, Richard, you had Brian Little. And Dustin Byfuglien, Ezra, you had him at number 4. Mm-hmm. You're number 3. You're down to Mark Scheifele, Evander Kane, and Blake Wheeler at this point. Richard, your number 3 value.
I have Mark Scheifele at number 3. I've always thought kind of Scheifele's going to top out as second line center. I stand by that. Always surprised me with some glimpses and makes me think he might even be better than that. But overall, I think the other two guys you mentioned are proven commodities, and I'll rank them 1-2 after in a certain order with respect to, taking into account the fact their ages and things like that. But Scheifele being, on his entry level deal, clearly being able to, pass the puck well, and he's a good stick handler. He's got a nice wrist shot. I don't know if teams know exactly what he's going to be yet, but that potential and that cheap contract and that term and those and all of those things play into the fact that I think he's the third most valuable trade chip on the Jets.
Yeah, Scheifele's third for me, Richie. I think he might be a little bit higher if he had been in the NHL for a couple more years. Mark Scheifele is the future of the Winnipeg Jets, though. 7th overall pick, first ever pick for the Winnipeg Jets. And he seems to me to be getting better each and every game. And he shows a high skill level. And I know he's only got a goal here for the Jets. But, you can see that, he's starting to have chemistry with Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane. He's only played one game this year. But, he has such a high skill level. And I think that, a lot of teams would be interested in Mark Scheifele, whether it's for a second line center or whatever, probably at this point. But to me, Blake Wheeler and Evander Kane just have higher trade value than Scheifele.
We will rank our number 2 and our number 1 coming up at 2:15 as we'll go to break. Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune is going to join us at 2 o'clock. And of course, we want to hear from you. Go to our website, illegalcurve.com. Right now, there's a new poll on the website. If the Winnipeg Jets trade a player, a skater, not really a goaltender, but a skater, from their active roster, who do you think it will be? Vote now, illegalcurve.com. Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune coming up next.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Spurgeon wheels his way into the offensive zone for Coyle. Long shot deflects wide. Koivu chops it back behind the net for Vanek. Vanek, top of the slot here for Spurgeon. A shot, he scores! Tipped in by Coyle. Charlie Coyle with a tip, and the Wild get the game's first goal, and they lead it by a score of 1-0.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, our good friend Michael Russo. Michael, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
Very good.
That's good. Michael, we wanted to start talking about the Wild and start with their goaltending, given how there was a lot of chatter in the offseason about the Minnesota Wild goaltending, and they had Nicklas Backstrom and Josh Harding, and a lot of back and forth with Darcy Kemper, who sort of emerged in the playoffs last year, and then they eventually did sign him to that contract. It took a little while. Through four games so far this season for the Wild, he's only given up two goals, save percentage of .980 right now. How surprised are you with the performance of Darcy Kemper to start the season for the Wild?
I'm really not surprised. The Wild last year, goaltending was an issue, and if you really look at it at the end of the day, it wasn't, because every goaltender, they, you know, it was an issue getting goalies to play, but it, every time they threw a goalie in there, they succeeded, whether it was Harding or Kemper, or at the end of the season, Ilya Bryzgalov. And, you know, we all know that Darcy Kemper is a, real quality goalie. He just doesn't have a lot of games under his belt in the NHL to have the template. And that was the big thing into the offseason with his contract situation, is that the Wild just didn't want to give him a one-year, one-way contract, because then if he has a monster season this year, then all of a sudden he has arbitration rights. But the second a two-year one-way came on the table, the Wild are more than willing to do that, because then if he has the numbers this year, he won't go to ARB. So, and then they could have a bargain goalie next year, number one goalie at $1.5 million. So, right now he's gotten off to a great start. The Wild play great defense in front of him, and that's why it seems like most goalies that play in the Wild system do well.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about Mikko Koivu, and I was reading your most recent Russo's Rants. Michael's got a great blog, Russo's Rants, and you're actually writing about Mikko Koivu getting knocked out of the faceoff circle about half a dozen times. It's pretty interesting, but I wanted to ask you about his offensive struggles. He doesn't have a point yet this year. Why is Mikko struggling so much so early this season?
Well, he struggled also offensively in the playoffs a lot of the year last year, too, and I do think that he's slowing down as a player. Still a quality two-way player, but he's probably not your top-line center anymore. And, that line with Thomas Vanek just hasn't gone at all this year. There's been absolutely zero chemistry, and they both are without a goal. And as you mentioned, Mikko without a point. And right now, Mike Yeo is trying to get that line going. He started last game by putting Charlie Coyle on the line. The line did generate the first goal of the game and the winning goal. It is a bit of a slow line, and so what Mike's trying to do is get skaters on the right side to try to speed that line up and also have those guys do the dirty work for both Mikko and Thomas Vanek. The big thing is that he doesn't want to split the two of them up, Vanek and Koivu, because right now the Granlund-Commonville-Parisi line has been outstanding. The third line has been really good with Hala and Niederreiter, and last game Justin Fontaine, and the fourth line has been good. So, really what he's trying to do is kind of keep all the duos together and just try to figure out a right wing to that line to really spark both Koivu and Vanek. But, so far, as you mentioned, the two of them really haven't done anything offensively.
Michael, there's been a few signings, the Wild recently, most recently this week on Wednesday, and you broke that Charlie Coyle signed a 5-year, $16 million deal. When I look at the deal, Michael, I wonder why Coyle and his agent would sign the deal. Why do you think that they signed the deal?
I think that he just wanted the job security. It's an interesting thing, the whole debate between, do you sign a bridge deal or do you sign long term at maybe a lower price than you get. If he turns out to be a monster player and a power forward, then the Wild in years 3, 4, and 5 of that contract are going to have a bargain price of $3.2 million. And as you kind of alluded to there, it's why Mikhail Granlund has absolutely no interest in signing long-term. Mm-hmm. He and his agent think that by the time he's 24, 25, 26 years old, that there's a chance Mikhail Granlund's going to be a $6 million hockey player. Well, obviously the Wild are not going to give him any sort of base salary at this stage in his career at 21, when he still has, only a 40-point season under his belt. So, what Mikhail Granlund's trying to do right now is sign a short-term deal of 2 or 3 years, and then, prove yourself over the next couple of years, and then all of a sudden get the big home run contract in your third contract.
Do you think that Coyle signing wanting security, taking the 5-year deal at, to me, discounted dollars, is at all a reflection of his confidence in himself?
Yeah, and I think it's a confidence. No, I don't think, if you're saying that he doesn't believe that he's going to become the player, I just think that he's the guy that really is convinced that he wants to be here long term and not think about this at all. And I think he also is well aware that he's only 21 years old, and by the end of that 5 years, he's going to be 26 and still hit a home run eventually if he becomes the player that he wants. I really think it's more of a reflection of what the Wild have done here with these young kids growing together, and they want to continue to do that. It's a real interesting thing that's going on here with the fact that, Brodin and Niederreiter and Coyle and Granlund and Eric Halla and even Jason Zucker, that these guys are all the same age, they're growing together, they live basically in the same building together, and they just want to continue to be a part of the core that kind of leads this team to being, among the elite in this division. And so I think it's more so, to me it's more of a character thing than Charlie just not thinking that he can become the player. I think he knows, hey, let's be honest, you and I would kill for $3.2 million. 21 years old, I think that's the way he looks at it, is that he's not being taken advantage of by any stretch of the imagination. First 3 years of the deal, the exact to the penny framework that Niederreiter got on a three-year deal, and then all of a sudden he makes $8 million the last 2 years of his contract.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Our guest is Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, talking about the Minnesota Wild.
Staying on the contracts, Michael, Jonas Brodin signs a six-year deal, $25 million, signs away 2 years of his UFA status, which is pretty significant, I think, in this market. Again, I'd say the same question, I guess, Michael. Why would his agent and Brodin sign this deal?
Well, I think, $4.2 million is nothing to sneeze at. And, I think there is more of the risk factor on whether or not he's going to ever evolve into the offensive player that the Wild hope that he is. Even if he doesn't, I still think it's a good contract because of the type of young kid that he is. He is such a good defenseman. At 19 years old, he was already a number two top. He was a number one, two defenseman on his team alongside Ryan Suter. He is basically a human breakout at times if you watch how mobile he is. So, I think that he just feels that, at the end of the day, he's right there and with the top young defenseman in the league in terms of their salary structure. The defenseman market is so much more defined than the forward market right now. If you look at where he is, he's right there with the Cam Fowlers and the John Carlsons and those names. And I think that the Wild feel like that's a good contract for him to be at.
Big picture, Michael, Chuck Fletcher, in my mind, does a real nice job on both of these contracts. Do you see other GMs maybe trying to jump the gun here and trying to sign their players in similar contract situations to these type of deals to take advantage of, maybe non-Granlund-type players right now?
Yeah, I just think that this is what we've seen. This has been the pattern that we've seen since 2004-05 lockout. It's kind of the old death of the number of the second contract thing coming into play again. When your organizations that lose guys like Marian Gaborik at 25 years old for absolutely no compensation, it makes you realize that you better, overpay, if that's the right word to use there, for the guys on the second deal. So, it's a lot of projecting. And what you do is, you got to hope you're right. And, the Wild right now are taking the risk that they believe that these kids are going to become the core that, of the hockey team to go along with the veteran leadership they have, guys like Parisian, Suter, and Pominville, and Koivu. But you're right. I've covered this league now. It's my 20th NHL season covering the league. And, I've never seen this where, you're paying guys this type of money that haven't proven anything yet. But that's just the way that this league has become. When you accelerate free agency, it was back in the day where you owned the guy's rights until 31 years old and 30 to 28 in 10 years. And now it's 27 years old or 7 years. So you can lose guys at 25. So you better make a judgment after their entry level contract if the guy has the right talent, whether or not you're going to pay him the big bucks now.
The flip side to the equation here, Michael, is the contract of Michael Granlund, and you spoke with his agent, Todd Diamond, and both sides said that they're not looking for a long-term contract in the negotiations. They're looking for more of the quote-unquote bridge deal. How comfortable are the Wild in entering into a bridge deal with Michael Granlund?
I think they're very comfortable because they know, first of all, that when that bridge deal is up, he's still going to have a year or two before his unrestricted year, so you're not going to lose him for nothing. And the other reason why I think the deal makes sense from a Wild standpoint is there's two big reasons. One is this is the Minnesota Wild, and Michael Granlund's agent could think that he could become an 80-point center here, but there's nobody in Wild history that have gotten that. It's kind of the same thing where people were asking me, and if there's a chance Thomas Vanek at 35 this year. Well, I mean, first of all, this at Thomas Vanek stage in his career, I don't think he's getting 35. And two, he's definitely not doing it in Minnesota. This is an organization that's had 135 goal scorer in their history. It just doesn't seem to happen here. So, you know, I think the Wild probably know that deep down that Kyle Granlund's not going to be an 80-point player here, even if he could be in other organizations. But the other reason why it works for Mikhail Granlund is that he's had a history of concussions. He had three last year. So I think from a Wild perspective, before you enter into a six-year deal for him, you want to make sure that he's going to survive the next three seasons. I mean, he is an undersized center. He's got an immense amount of talent, but you know, the type of game that he plays leads to potential injury. I mean, he's not like Pierre-Marc Bouchard, who had concussion issues, but that avoided contact from everybody. I mean, this is a player that, you know, and I commend him for it, he initiates a lot of the contact. He's a very competitive kid. And unfortunately for him, the three concussions he had last year, two of them were him dishing out the check. So I think that the, you know, situation with the short-term deal probably works for both sides.
Michael, this defense group as a whole, Ryan Suter, he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL, plays 25, 30 minutes a game on average, obviously has a great partner there in Jonas Brodin. Scandella and Spurgeon, they were together most of last year. But when you look at this defense as a whole, you know, the Minnesota Wild upset the Colorado Avalanche last year and then obviously lost to the Chicago Blackhawks in a very good series. When you look at this team, and we expect them to be a playoff team, is this group good enough to compete with the Chicagos and the LAs and the Anaheims?
Well, it's to be determined. You know, if you're asking if the defense group is an issue, I really don't think so. Maybe their third pair. Their third pair is a concern because you have two rookies there right now in Christian Follin and Matt Dumba that don't have a lot of experience, obviously. And then, you know, your other defensemen there are Nate Prosser and Keith Ballard. Keith is, you know, at the stage of his career where he's been injury prone and has been pretty erratic. And Nate, you know, I actually like Nate Prosser a lot, but he is your prototypical sixth defenseman. So the top four, I think the Wild are as good as most teams. I mean, obviously Suter and Brodin we've talked about here, but the most underrated people on this team are Marco Scandella and Jared Spurgeon. Jared Spurgeon gives you the same game every single night. He's a defensive threat and an offensive threat. Plays 22 minutes, even though he's undersized. You know, and it's just been outstanding for them. And Marco Scandella has turned himself into a force here. The same thing. I mean, you know, consistency. And that pair has played together between the minors and here for now five seasons. So, you know, they're very comfortable with each other. So top four, I don't think is an issue. My guess is at some point this season, the Wild will have to make a decision on their third pair and probably make some sort of acquisition.
Final question for you, Michael. I think it was around Christmas last year, just before the Wild were going through a terrible slump, and Mike Gill was, I believe you report that he was almost let go by the Wild, and certainly things have changed since then. And you've mentioned you've been covering the league now for 20 years and in Florida but before Minnesota. How has Mike Yeo changed as a coach over the time since he's been in Minnesota, maybe like not only in handling the players but also system-wise and in different aspects?
Just a lot more confident in himself. And it really is funny that you asked me this. The other day I was watching the Winnipeg game, and I saw Paul Maurice coming out to the bench to begin the second period. And he just had this confidence about him when he goes and stands behind the bench. And this is a guy that has been coaching in the NHL since his 20s. You know, I covered him twice when he was in Carolina, you know, just in that Southeast division as when I covered Florida. And so he has this confident aura about him, just being a veteran coach. And that's what I see from Mike Yeo now. This is his fourth season with the Wild. And you can just tell that he's a man who's very comfortable in his own skin right now. Had a joke at the end of one of my stories today that everybody needs to realize that this is what happens when he's not around. You know, things go up in flames. It was a joke at the end of a story about a fire that I wrote. But, you know, the point of that quote was actually not only the double joke was, you know, all these people that wanted to kick him out of here last year. And so, you know, system-wise, you can't argue with what he has done here on the ice. The Wild have been one of the best defensive teams during his entire tenure. He's a guy that coached, you know, Sidney Crosby's and the Evgeny Malkins in the world, so he knows how to deal with the egos of star players, and he knows how to teach the young kids. And so far, so good. It's looked good. But you're right, he was almost on his way out last year. The Wild, unlike a lot of teams in the league, took the risk of not firing him, and it wound up turning the season around. And when they could have easily made the move and gone after a Paul Maurice or a Peter Laviolette.
Michael Russo covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Michael, we appreciate the time as always.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks very much, Michael. Let's go to break. When we come back, we continue looking at the Winnipeg Jets and their trade value. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 2 o'clock, Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290.
It's going fast, Drew.
I know, flying by. Big thanks to Michael Russo.
Yeah, that was good. You know, he does a great job. He used to cover the Florida Panthers for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. I believe I have that name right.
You do.
Did a great job there. Moved up to take over the Wild beat. I think it was about 10 years ago now. And he's a great writer. He's been covering the NHL for a long time, and he's very well respected in and around the National Hockey League.
In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on our website, illegalcurve.com, and of course on TSN1290.ca. Paul Maurice met with the assembled media a little bit earlier this afternoon. Here is part of that scrum.
Well, you want to separate. I mean, clearly, you know, there's some good offense that's being had by our team that's not being converted into goals. The more we'll focus on, are you generating that offense at the expense of defense? So how much, and cheat's the right word, but how much of it is puts you at risk? And then what are the things that are just pure defensive reads? Whether you think you're being over-aggressive or not, if we've got a pinch in D, where's the filth, those kind of things. So that's what we looked at today. The offense that has nothing to do with being out of routes or making a high-risk play to generate the offense, I've seen too much of it. You know, we had a number of poor reads that gave up chances. I had him at 5 when the score was 3-1. So I'm not saying those weren't good chances. I'm not hanging that on our goaltender. I mean, they had 8 really good chances. Number of 12. If you get 12 against power play and penalty kill, that's fine, but they can't be 12-8 chances. You know, we gave up some good chances in that game. Some of it is directly due to their skill level. We just didn't have enough solid positional play.
Your thoughts on what Paul Maurice had to say there, especially about the reads, which we spoke about in the first hour?
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate. I mean, he knows the team better than we do, so he knows what's going on. He's talking about probably the Klitson decision and the Enstrom decision there, and not only those decisions, but, you know, where's the support from Lowry or Ladd or whatever it may be on those goals and different other situations and other scoring chances. So, yeah, you know, he's accurately, I think, depicting what happened last night, and he's got to fix it, though. And the guys got to fix it, the players. I mean, you know, we always put so much pressure on the coaches here. And certainly the GM hasn't done much to help the coach since this team came back. And so he should feel pressure as well. But the players also should feel pressure. You know, a little bit of a sense of pride. And I thought last night, one of the more disconcerting parts for Jets fans, I assume, last night was Buffen fights Gudas, little scores and momentum in the arena. You know, obviously, they get those 2 quick goals, but... You know, Wheeler's nice attempt and goal at the end of the game, but most of the guys, like halfway through that third period, there was nothing.
Well,
there was nothing. I mean, that's embarrassing, right? Like, throw a couple hits, get engaged a bit in the game, at least make people think that you're still have a chance to come back. And I don't know, there was too many listless shifts there, and I know people are playing out of position, but excuses, it's game 7 already. I mean, it's only game 7, like... Don't use the excuses just yet.
Well, I mean, you can look at it at game 7, or you can look at it as being, you know, game, you know, 249 for this group, you know, more or less altogether, and it's the same, you know, the same sort of issues. I mean, I leaned over to you at some point. I think it was about, Wheeler scored with about 10 minutes to go in the game. And then I leaned over to you at about the 5-minute mark and said, I don't think the Jets have touched the puck since Wheeler's goal.
Yeah.
And I mean, when it's a 2-goal game and there's 10 minutes to go, you're not in a good position. I don't think, you know, I'm telling anything, you know.
Wouldn't it be game 253?
It would be if I was doing the real quick math really well off my head.
Lightning, by the way, were down to 10 forwards.
Sure. They lost JT Brown earlier in the game after he got the big hit by Chris Thorburn. And I'm not sure who
that was. It was a clean hit, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, no issue with
that. So, I mean, they're down to 10 forwards, so they're rolling 3 lines, guys.
On the road.
They're rolling three lines on the road, fourth game of a five-game home road trip. So,
and they're down regulars from their lineup that didn't even start the game.
Calgary is playing here at the end of a road trip, too.
Yeah.
No Callahan and Hedman, too.
That's right. No Callahan, no Hedman.
So no Kane excuse can suffice. Well,
and there can't be any excuses at all, right? And, I mean, the Jets are in a position, you know, it's already been a bad homestand.
Yeah.
You've lost three out of four, so you got to beat Colorado to make it at least respectable.
To salvage it, yeah.
To salvage, you know, some points here. So, you know, it's a big game, and it's a Sunday afternoon game, and we know how those Sunday afternoon games can go. They can go two ways. They can be really good, or they can be really bad.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it from the Saturday afternoon games that they played a litany of the first 3 years, in that the team tended to come out and sort of sleepwalk through a little bit of those. People aren't necessarily into it like they are a Friday night game. And if the Jets sleepwalk against the Colorado Avalanche, before you know it, they're going to have seven goals behind the goalie potentially, like they did last night against Vancouver.
You don't like blowing out of proportion saying tomorrow's, you know, a must-win, you know, huge game. But I don't think Ezzy's overstating it there. You're 2-5. You go 2-6. You go on this road trip, lucky to win two of four. You're getting close to being part of the discussion for those top two guys. And that's a whole different story, whether you want to be part of the discussion for the top two guys. Because based on the way the roster has been constructed, I would suggest that that wasn't their intention with 100% confidence.
Yeah. You know, Gary Lawless.
Maybe it's not a bad thing that.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm talking about the intentions. Like when Edmonton hired Pat Quinn, signed Nikolai Habibulin, and then bottomed out and finished last. I don't know why Steve Tambellini, and it comes up, we're so proud to be able to select, I don't know which of their 13 first overall picks it was that year. I think it might have been Taylor Hall.
Yeah, the only good one.
The point is that like when the person in charge tries to build something and then it bottoms out. You have to evaluate why that's the case.
Sure, because this team, you know, certainly did not expect to be with the Buffalo and Carolinas in that discussion. Now, if it ends up that way, I think Jets fans might be okay with that, especially if it ends up getting the first or the second overall pick. But if you don't,
more than okay with that. But
I know intentions versus end result are two different things.
It's a big issue, and you're not like Buffalo, as you sort of know when you get here. But it's not like Buffalo where you've had 25 draft picks over the next 2 years, 3 years.
Well, you know what I was going to say is like. The lawman is always talking about an H&L, about American Thanksgiving kind of being, you know, at the point in the season where if you're 6 to 8 points out of it, you know, it's going to be tough to make up those points. And, you know, you're looking at the Jets right now, last place in the Western Conference. It's only 7 games. It's still very early, guys, and the Jets can still turn the season around, but they don't have 2 months to do it. Like, they've got to do it starting tomorrow and with this road trip, and they've got to make up some points, because at American Thanksgiving, late November, when you've played 21 or 22 games and the season's a quarter over, and you're behind a team like, you know, the Sharks or the Wild or a team like that, you're 8 points behind, it's tough to make those points up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's still early here, but, you know, there's some cause for concern.
Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk about our top two in terms of trade value of forwards, and then we'll shift our focus to the top trade value on the defenseman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. To recap our ranking of the Winnipeg Jets forwards in their trade value, we immediately disqualified from the conversation Jim Slater, Chris Thorburn, Matt Halaschuk, TJ Gagliardi, and Anthony Peluso. Both Richard and Ezra agreed that Michael Frolik has the 9th most value, Matthew Perreault has the 8th most value, and Adam Lowry has the 7th most value. Richard said Andrew Ladd had the 6th most value. Ezra said that Brian Little has the 6th most value. Ezra said that Andrew Ladd has the 5th most value, and Richard said that Dustin Byfuglien has the 5th most value. Ezra said that Dustin Byfuglien has the fourth most value, and Richard said that Brian Little has the fourth most value. Both of you agreed that Mark Scheifele has the third most value.
And Ezra says that Richie has the highest value on this show.
Yes, but we knew that going into the program anyway. Number two. It's down to Blake Wheeler or Evander Kane for you guys.
For me, Blake Wheeler's number one.
So Evander Kane is number two?
Yes.
Like the draft lottery, you have to say number one before number two.
Yeah, number one for me. To me, Blake Wheeler is a better all-around player. He's established himself as the best offensive player on the Winnipeg Jets, setting career highs last year. Was obviously an Olympian for the USA last year. You know, Blake Wheeler's got the A on his sweater now. You know, Blake Wheeler's been dropping the gloves early on this year, something that we wouldn't expect from Blake Wheeler, but I think he's really taking this team on his back, and he's become the MVP of this team, I think. So for me, you know, Blake Wheeler, he's got, what, 3 years left on his contract?
Four years
left on his contract at a reasonable cap hit for his production, I must say. So for me, Blake Wheeler's number one, and then, you know, I'll let Richie get in here, but for me, Evander Kane's number two, just for the fact that we know how much potential he's had, and it's unfortunate here that he's missed the first six of the first seven games of the season with that knee injury, going knee-on-knee with Mark Scheifele there in Arizona. But to me, Wheeler's a better all-around player, and I think he brings those leadership qualities and all of that. So that's why I put Wheeler above Kane.
I have Wheeler 2, Kane 1. And I have Wheeler 2 because I know, as you mentioned, a lot of the reasons why. $5.6 million for this season and four after that. You know, Blake Wheeler right now is 28 years old. You're going to get him through his, what, your 32, 33 year. It's the number... it's probably considered pretty reasonable. If he's going to get you 65 points, you know what you're getting. He can play in your top line. He can play in your second line, depending on what team were to, say, acquire him in this hypothetical situation. The reason I have Kane 1 is because Kane is 23 years old. So like you're getting prime years, 5.25 cap hits. It's a little bit less. And I've of course, realized that there's different amount of RFA years when the contracts were signed. But you have a guy who has scored 30 goals before. I know 19 last year and 17 the year prior to that in the lockout year. And there's injury, has been injury issues, but size, speed, shot, I think he still is the most appealing player to other teams. You have to remember, other teams always think they can fix a player. And if they think a guy's broken, I think we'll talk more about that on defense than really at forward. But I think that Evander Kane will net you the most in a trade. Do I think who is the most effective player right now, points-wise? Yeah, it's Blake Wheeler. But I think in a trade, years ahead of him, contract security, 3 more years after this one, potential to be a goal scorer in a league that doesn't have many goal scorers anymore. It's so hard to score, and you can skate in this league. I think he would be the most appealing option in a trade to other teams.
We didn't talk about him on purpose until now. Alex Burmistrov, still property of the Winnipeg Jets, apparently wants to come back to the NHL after this year, after he's done playing in Russia this year.
Mm-hmm.
What's his trade value? Where would you slot him in among the top nine that we've really looked at?
I mean, he's right around Perreault Frolik, I think, because I mean, he's young enough and won't cost too much money, but people don't know if he can play, like what his role will be. Can he be a scorer? Or is he more of your third line guy? And so he'll be cheaper. He won't get a big contract, and because he hasn't proven enough. But so, I mean, I think Burmistrov probably gets you another player who's maybe a prospect problem for another team. The high end you're getting for Burmistrov, I think the high end would be a low second. So probably more than Frolik, depending on what Perreault in the market that, you know, that he could slot right around there. But that's what I would think he'd have in terms of value on the market. It's got to be the right fit, though. You know, and it's got to have a need. And he could play center and wing, but, you know, depending on what that team's need is size-wise. And he's not the smallest guy. He's strong on the puck, but face-off-wise and things like that. So... I don't see it being in Winnipeg, but I certainly think the Jets, if they can get an asset for him and aren't going to use him, they should trade him.
Very tough to evaluate Alexander Burmistrov and his trade value, Richie, because his last season was the lockout year, and he had a bad year.
Yeah.
He had 10 points in 44 games. He was a healthy scratch, didn't get along with Claude Noel. He's done, you know, I haven't seen him play in the KHL, but he's been okay in the KHL. And, you know, for the Jets, and I think, Richie, the point that you made, you know, that resonates the most with me is it has to be the right fit.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're a team like the Nashville Predators, who acquired a bunch of players, maybe you're looking to acquire someone.
Right.
Are you going to acquire him with what happened with Alexander Radulov?
Right.
So, I mean, like, it has to be a team that has had that experience. I don't think David Poile is going to be, you know, wanting to acquire a player like Burmistrov based on past history with Radulov. And obviously, that's a team that's into the Jets division. But I think there might be a team that, you know, takes a look at him and says, okay, well, you know, he's 23 years old. He's been playing better in Russia. The situation in Winnipeg wasn't ideal. A guy like Burmistrov wants to be a top six center. And he wasn't getting that opportunity in Winnipeg. And, you know, a team would have, you'd have to think that a team would envision him as that. So I agree with Richie. I don't think his trade value is super high, but you could probably get a draft pick back for him if the Jets decide to go that route.
Let's look at the defense now. And again, to refresh, we're looking at everything that has to do with that player. We're looking at their contract status. Mm-hmm. We're looking at their age. We're looking at the amount of wear and tear they have on their body. And we're only looking at players who are in the NHL currently. So we're not looking at Josh Morrissey. We weren't looking at Nikolai Ehlers and Nick Patan on the forward group. So let's start on the back end. You know, who's the low? There's only really seven guys we're talking about here. So is Adam Partey clear-cut the lowest guy in terms of value?
Yeah, Adam Partey be the lowest guy. So, like, maybe waivers. Nothing more than a seventh rounder. Paul Postman, probably nothing more than a fifth or sixth rounder. Maybe so a fifth.
Are you guys in agreement that Partey would be number seven and Postman would be number six?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think...
I actually think Klitsam's at least tradable with his contract right now.
Well, then yeah. Let's talk about that.
I think Klitsam's actually seven. Six would be Partey. Five would be Postman. I think they're all really untradeable.
Yeah, Postman's a bit younger, Richie. He's got a little bit more offensive ability. I think, the lawman tweeted this yesterday. I think Postman's got one of the better shots on D, and they should use it a little bit more. But
that's why I say fifth. Like, you team might see an interest in moving the pocket, can't defend well enough and all that stuff.
Also, an RFA next year, so again...
Yeah, he has rights.
You know, he's got arbitration rights, but it's not significant at that point in time.
So I've clipped them 2.06... a year for this year. Next year, I don't think he's tradable at all. So I think he's seven. Partey is six. Postma is five. I have Stewart is four. I mean, I think people would mostly agree with that. Stewart at 2.6 per year, I mean, has a value in terms of blocking shots and toughness here. Right now, he's playing over his head, and it's not his fault. It's just the team hasn't addressed the top four need for a few years now. I don't know how tradable that contract is. I mean, you're not going to get much more than a late, probably like a similar player or a second or third maybe for him. I think he fits more in terms of the value of to the franchise and the community than it does on the market.
Do you think you can get a second round pick with the contract?
Depending on the team, depending on where the cap goes next year, Drew, it's all fluid, right? So probably not, but you never know.
Ezzy, are you in agreement with that?
I would say so. I'd probably have him ranked there. Yeah. It's a tough call when a player is valued more to the team than he would be in the trade market. So,
What about Zach Bogosian now? I mean, Zach Bogosian's got the long term contract that he signed a number of years ago, has not lived up to that contract based on his play as of late. I mean, he's still got, after this season, he still has five more years at $5.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that, you know, without looking at the rankings so much at this point, is that contract tradable right now?
I think it's tradable, Drew, because there's other teams, other contracts that they like to move. And I think also this goes to the point I was making just a few minutes ago, and that's about fixing a player. I feel like people think probably Zach Bogosian needs some fixing, and I think with his ability to skate, natural skating ability, and ability to log big minutes in a league where it's tough to log those big minutes. I know sometimes health is an issue, but for the most part he's been a horse. I think there's teams that would certainly value him. And I think because of that, see, I personally would value Anstrom above Bogosian. So Anstrom would be my two. I think Trouba is a clear-cut one. Yeah. I'll give that away here. On an entry-level deal, no matter what, I think he's the most potential on this team, although he hasn't been that good this year. Trouba, one. Anstrom, two for me. Bogosian would be three. But I could see teams, and I realize when you look at Bogosian, you're talking about Bogosian being 24, Anstrom being 29. Anstrom adds that offensive element. Now, defensively, he's not great because just size-wise, he has trouble and different things there. And I agree with you, Drew, that Bogosian kind of has regressed, really, in the past couple of years. Certainly hasn't progressed as far as I'm concerned. But I think Anstrom would be a two. He's got 5.75 for three more years after this. If he can put up a lot of points. You see, Anstrom plays on an offensive team. Anstrom is very valuable. Like, watch Tampa yesterday. They're not defending too much if you watch him all the time. He would put up a lot of points in that team. he'd be more valuable than a team that's always defending like the Jets are, because they don't have a good enough offensive players. So I think he'd have a good, you know, to a Pittsburgh, he'd have a lot of value.
Yep.
Bogosian, though, to me would be the third most valuable guy. But on the market, there's probably some team that says 24 years old, you know, can't have a big shot, they can't hit the net.
Can skate like the wind.
All that stuff. We need a guy like that. We want to build from the back end. We could use a guy like that. That guy, there's still, you know, we have him for a long time. We can really invest time and effort into him. So I would say Trouba 1, Enstrom 2, Bogosian 3. But I can see a lot of people saying Bogosian 2 and Enstrom 3.
Well, yeah, and I can't argue with that, because Trouba is the future rock of this decor.
It's the current rock too, almost. You know,
yeah. And he led the Jets in ice time yesterday. So there's not going to be an argument for me on Jacob Trouba being the defenseman that has the highest trade value. So I look at Enstrom and Bogo, and I think I put Enstrom a little bit higher. I thought Enstrom was the best defenseman on the ice yesterday for the Jets, and you know, his ability to make plays. Mm-hmm. Really from nothing is truly impressive. He's been there on the power play the whole time the Jets have been here, you know, and his and contract hit, cap hit is pretty good for what he brings.
People really don't like it, but I don't think it's, people have asked me that before, you know, is it untradeable? I don't think at all.
Like, Colorado doesn't want Tobias Enstrom on
that's
their
exactly
team.
Right. That's a great fit right there. That's an example
A team would love to have Enstrom on their team, and you know, you look at Bogo, and you know, was he given too many years by Chevy and the Jets? Maybe. Has he struggled with the defensive side of his game? Yes. Has he struggled with the offensive side of his game? Yes. But he's 24 years old. So I agree with Richie in the sense that a team might look at his age and the fact that he has the physical elements that Enstrom doesn't have. Enstrom's a better offensive defenseman, Drew, but Bogo has that ability. We've seen him. When he gets mad, I mean, he can be very effective. I'd like to see Bogo play that mad all the time, to be honest with you, because you know, he's had inconsistencies to his game. And I still think, you know, he can figure those, you know, working with a guy like Charlie Huddy, he can figure those things out in his game because he's still young. And I don't think, you know, talking about who's more tradable, which is a different topic, Drew, as we talked about, as opposed to having a higher trade value, I think Enstrom's more tradable just because of, you know, Bogo's contract and his age. So, yeah, I think, you know, Trouba's the guy that I think is the highest, and Bogo and Enstrom are right behind him.
There you have it. Looking at the defense side, there is agreement across the board. Grant Clitson with the least amount of value, then Adam Pardy, Paul Postma, Mark Stewart, Zach Bogosian, Toby Enstrom, and Jacob Trouba. When we come back, we talk about the month of November, which means Movember. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, Rumors have been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. November 1st, the grand reopening, which is 1 week from today, in fact. They're doing some renovations. They'll be reopened on November 1st. And, of course, a huge lineup for the month of November, including the guys from Broken Lizard and the 30th anniversary celebrations coming up November 14th and 15th. Tickets available right now, rumorscomedyclub.com. With it almost being November, we're pleased to welcome into the studio, as we do each and every year around this time, our good friend representing Movember Winnipeg, Jeff Paulson. And I got to start with this, Jeff. You already got a mustache. You're cheating.
You could look at it as that. It's actually what we do at this time of year before the first, where we go down to the wood to start fresh again. So it's what we call our promo, and I think it's pretty deadly.
It's a good mustache. I'm not criticizing the mustache, but you know,
better mustache than you have, Drew.
We need some sort of photographic evidence that on October 31st you are clean shaven, leading in to the 1st of November.
Yeah, it will actually be November 1st that I go down to no mo whatsoever.
No mo.
Start all over again.
So you're gonna have no mo on the 1st of November.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Well, Jeff, this is the thing though. If Drew would have participated in Movember last year, he would have known that. He wouldn't have even asked that question.
How it works.
So,
exactly, yeah.
Gentlemen, it takes a while to grow a beard like I have. I'm not like Ezra Ginsberg, who's half man, half ape, in that he can grow a beard within mere minutes. So I, you know, I'm not going to just get rid of this thing of beauty that's on my face that quickly.
What about Remus? Can Remus grow a beard?
Well, it's not
mustache,
a beard.
Mustache.
All he's got to grow is a mustache. And Remus is the only one of a legal curve who has not yet participated in Movember.
We got to do something about that, don't we?
Hold on. Get Remus a mic here.
You know, you can grow a mustache. I can see the facial hair. You know, you have a little bit of stubble right there now, Remus. Why aren't you participating in Movember?
It's too itchy. I participate by donating to Ezra Ginsberg every year.
Okay, that's good, but
I can deal with.
We'd still like to see you. This is the third year, Jeff, that Illegal Curve's participating in Movember. And, you know, I know Dave Manuk's going to be participating. I know Richie is going to be participating. He participated last year. Drew, all I hear from you and Remus are excuses.
Again, I participated before, at least. Remus hasn't participated at all.
Look, the point is raising money, and I donated to Ezra the last couple of years, and I'll donate to him again.
Okay, you know what? That's fine. I'm just saying, Remus, you know, there's some lady listeners out there that might want to see a little push broom on there.
It gets itchy. I can't handle it. I wouldn't even last.
You know, Jeff, I'm sorry that you have to hear this
this.
Jeff Paulson Jeff.
Jeff Paulson from Movember Winnipeg joining us here in studio. Talk about Movember. Of course, it starts November the 1st. So what's the plan? Last year, you had Ezra doing MOGA, which is yoga for Movember.
Yep.
It was
so
great.
You know, what's on the tap for the month of November this year?
There will be some more of that. Next weekend, our official launch or kickoff shavedown event will take place at Kelowna Place Shopping Center Saturday afternoon. So come on down, check it out, be part of it if you like. We'll be doing a big sort of registration drive down there all day long, and then have the media sort of shave down take place about 1 o'clock. So should be a great day. You know, be Mickey Moose down there, Buzz and Boomer, that sort of thing for the kids to come and hang with while you're checking out the shave down and registering for the good cause.
Well, so, Jeff, I'll say this right now, count me in for that.
Okay.
I don't know about Drew; he might be at home combing his beard, but you know, sign me up for that, because you know this is the third year we've been doing Movember.
I hope you have some sort of heavy duty artillery to shave Ezra down.
We might send him to the Home Depot down the street.
Give him a little bit of a saw or something. A little bit of a chainsaw to get rid of that thing. So what else is on this? So that's next week.
Yeah, that's next week. And then, you know, as happens every year, there's numerous other events that pop up here and there that you just, if anyone who stays in touch with us via social media, so at Movember WPG, you can follow us on Twitter at that handle, or become friends with us on Facebook at Movember Winnipeg. That's where you get updates as the days go on, because there's always new things to pop up, like I said. But the real big thing we're looking forward to this year, Friday, Movember 28th, will be our gala party at the District Stop in the Exchange District, featuring local bands Federal Lights and the New Meanies. So it's going to be a real, real killer night down there, so we're looking forward to that one for sure.
And if you want more information, where can you get it again?
At Movember WPG or on Facebook, Movember Winnipeg.
Excellent. Jeff Paulson from Movember Winnipeg joining us here in studio. Confident in the Bombers today?
Yeah.
Confident that there'll be a game.
Yeah, I am. Here we mow Bombers. Yeah.
There you go. Here we go. Good. Here we mow Bombers. Yeah. Remus, let's end it with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Well, Remus, do we have it queued up? Okay, so my cheer is to Remus and his new...
I'm joint cheering this, by the way.
His new commercial. Remus?
Snow's on the way to your driveway, so sign up now with Winnipeg Plow. They'll clear your drive, they'll clear your walk, they'll clear your steps, and it ain't just talk. Just $3.49 for the whole wintertime. No matter how much snow, you're good to go. Go to winnipegplow.ca. Back today.
That is the best commercial that I have ever heard. How many takes did it take you, Remus?
Wasn't one, I can tell you that.
That is unbelievable.
Is that legit?
That's for real.
That's a little legit commercial.
That's currently airing on Bob and Virgin right now.
That is correct.
You know, I'll wrap up. I can't. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm going to cheer the work being done by the man on my right, Jeff Paulson, the rest of the Movember group, Movember Winnipeg, as you said. You know, check them out, follow them, support this great cause, supports men's cancers and men's mental health. Is
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, do you have a cheer?
you guys for having us on again and for being such great supporters year upon year. It's been great to see the growth from you guys continue.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Big thank you to the guests on today's show, Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com. Big thank you to Andy Murray, head coach of the Western Michigan Broncos. He joined us in the Saturday Spotlight. And big thank you to Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe, get a sent to your iPod each and every week. Also, check it out online, tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Jeff Paulson from Movember Winnipeg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. And if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Bombers game day coming up here on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.